Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefer, and this is episode number 289. Can you believe that, George? 289 episodes.
Wow.
Well, thank you guys for listening this week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps us to continue to highlight the great people that we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Samson, for bringing this episode to you for free. Only partner with companies that I believe in, both the people and the product. And the Schroeders are just some awesome people, family-owned business, doing some great things, have a fantastic product, care about people, care about the coaches they work with. So if you're in the market, please reach out to them. If not, just let them know how much you appreciate them the next time you see them at a conference. This week, I'm joined by George Carbel. He's 27 years. You've worked with elite athletes, and you've done it in Major League Baseball, the NFL, major college. Done a lot of work in the tactical space. I mean, we have a very similar kind of career in that bouncing back and forth between those different spaces. And just one of the all-time good guys in our profession. So appreciate you coming on the show, man.
Thanks for having me, Ron. Appreciate it.
You know, that varied experience. I mean, I think it's one of those things where, you know, I did baseball at the very beginning of my career, and then I was football my whole career, except for a brief stint with Special Forces. And now I'm bouncing in and out of all kinds of different sports, and it's, you know, that eclectic experience and working with lots of sports. I'm having to find myself kind of going back through, you know, program design, you know, components and the whole deal. But, you know, you've done that your whole career. Which experience or which one of those athletes that you've worked with in your background had probably the biggest impact on you as a coach?
My venture into strength and conditioning is very, very traditional. Very, very traditional. You know, high school athlete, got scholarships that I really wasn't interested in. I really wanted to go to an FBS school. I thought it was better than I was.
Sure.
But it was really the experience. Played, got injured, became a student assistant, and then did an internship at GA. And that's sort of the progression. It's very, very traditional, as you know. That's very, very traditional. And along that route, I met a lot of great people, a lot of great coaches. But what I've really, really kind of bogged down to and what's really a passion now is really working with the special operations community. You can't get it wrong there, right? There's no scoreboard. It's life or death. It's a very, very different performance enhancement injury prevention type program. Even though it's very similar to what everybody else does, the end point there, though, is that some of those guys may not come home.
Right.
And so that makes your job and my job a little bit different. It's a little bit more serious. It's more personal, where when you work with some of the athletes, even though I get emails still from guys I worked 20 years ago with. It's different. It's a little bit more or less personal. But that community is a community that needed help. Strength and conditioning and high performance is relatively new. The military has just been doing a lot of great things with things like the Thor program and just introducing more physical, a greater physical component to what being a soldier or a seaman or a pilot is. It's just very, very different. It's just something I've fell in love with, and I'm seem to be doing more and more of it. I think there's just a greater demand.
Yeah, I would echo that. I mean, it's from everything from taking the oath to being a strength coach, you know, working with the Thor. I was a part of the original Thor 3 program. It's a unique environment. And then to your point of life and death, I mean, I'll never forget the first time that, you know, I trained a group. They went off, came back, was back in the gym. I asked where so-and-so was and, didn't make it back, you know, and it was, I was like, what do you mean he's not here? And, you know, and it was kind of, an eye-opening.
It's home.
It's crazy. And so we're lucky to have those guys. You know, I want to dig into that a little bit more, but, you know, before we do, I always ask, you know, especially a guy that's got 27 years in this business, I mean, what's the biggest mistake you've made and how you've learned from it?
Thinking that I had to know everything. That's a huge mistake that young guys start. They sort of get to the analysis by paralysis. You know, I needed to know every single type of prioritization program there was. I needed to know everything there was about the conjugate program. I needed to know everything about block periodization. And as you know, it's impossible. Like, you just can't know everything.
Right.
You sort of have to start, implement something, reassess, change variables, and then keep going. And so at some point, I learned not to be afraid. I think fear was a driving factor for all those. I just need to know more. I need to go to every conference and read every book and hear every podcast. And it's, at the end of the day, we can't. It's just too much. But where is it that I can kind of build up myself the best? What can I offer more? I don't want to offer a service. I always want to offer a solution. Mm-hmm. So that's how I come into every conversation, every relationship, is I don't want to offer a service. I want to offer a solution. So the mistake is just thinking that I needed to know everything. And it's a mistake when I see and mentor other younger coaches. It's what I see is everybody wants to know everything, and you can't. You do the best you can, and you're going to make mistakes. And the moment you understand the mistakes are just part of the profession, you're going to be fine.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, obviously that's a great point, and one that we all learn somehow, some way, that, I mean, you just can't be that expert in everything. But one thing that you said there that I don't want people to skip over, that I think is very, very important, is always offering that solution. And I think that's something that, as a head strength coach, I never let my assistants come to me with a problem. They always have to come with me to me with a problem and their proposed solution. So that they have to think like a head strength coach, you know, because ultimately, you know, I got to make a decision, but I need to have the information to make the decision, you know, and having solutions to that, or being the solution and having solutions for problems that you're, you know, that's, you'll never have to sell a day in your life if that's the case. I mean, the people will find you, you know, and I think that that's an important part of the process as well. You know, you and I have been in this field for about the same amount of time. I mean, you got me by a couple of years, but, you know, we've talked, I mean, we talked a little bit off camera and things about being in this for as long as we've been in it, you know, dealing with coaches' burnout, you know, and the burnout of chasing that, the logo, chasing information, chasing different jobs. You know, it's a very real deal, and to sustain a career for 27 years takes a tremendous amount of resiliency. Talk a little bit about the advice that you would have for young coaches that are just getting started to be able to have a 27-year career in this profession.
You know, I see myself as a burnout expert, and that's because I went through burnout. It's really that simple. Is going through burnout gives you a different perspective than reading a book.
Yeah, sure.
So my story in a thumbnail is I left a job where I felt I had self-actualized. I was the boss. I opened the place. I cleaned it. I did the books. I did everything. I loved it. I couldn't believe I was waking up to that. I got offered a conversation that led to an application and a subsequent Skype interview for a job in pro sports. And I left everything I knew and moved 3,000 miles away. And I thought I had gotten to that top level of strength and conditioning, right? The job that everybody wants.
Right.
And it just didn't turn out to be what I thought it was. Immediately, I started to realize that I really didn't make a difference. The group of kids I was working with, primarily high school kids, and you can see the difference, right? Not just in speed and strength, but you can see them graduate, move on to the next level. And some, you know, some made it to the NFL or professional baseball, wherever it was. But I had a conversation with my father. We went to lunch, and he asked me, you know, how do you know you're making a difference here? Like, he said, these guys are going to make $20 million with or without you.
Right.
And that sort of made my head kind of explode. I never thought of that. I realized that I was not really relevant. And that was really, really difficult to kind of come to terms with that. And then the deciding factor, something that really kind of led to my burnout, was I was trying to learn people's names in the organization in the cafeteria one day. with 3x5 cards, I was writing their name and what they did in the back. And I'm not just talking coaching. I'm talking secretaries, the people that cleaned the building, everybody. And the head guy came over to me and said, you know, we haven't met. He introduced himself. And he said, what are you doing? And I said, oh, I'm trying to learn people's names in the organization. And he gave me a very, very puzzled look. And I knew it wasn't going to be a good answer. And he said, you know, you're here to be seen and not heard. And so I went from having my own business essentially self-actualized,
right,
top of Maslow's hierarchy, to wasn't relevant. And I didn't know that how it was making a difference. I was never evaluated. And little by little started having physiological symptoms that led to a massive burnout and having to one day make a decision. A doctor telling me, I can't help you unless you stop what you're doing, because what you're doing is what's causing all the problems. And so you can imagine, I just flew 3,000 miles away from home, living in an apartment by myself, working in pro sports, you know, flying team planes, riding team buses, living the life, wearing the polo, and I was miserable.
Yeah.
And at some point, made a decision that health was a factor, and I turned into resignation. And when I did, I took a couple months and I went surfing in Bali, just kind of bobbing up and down a surfboard, trying to figure out what the next step was. And I realized that what I had done was I essentially had built a life around a coaching practice. And that didn't work for me. Everything was coaching. 99% of it was coaching. 1% was life. And so on that surfboard in the middle of the ocean, I decided I was going to build a coaching practice around a life. It was going to look different. I was going to have to reinvent what I knew to be high performance and strength and conditioning. And so I came back a very, very different mindset, deciding that I was going to work for myself again and do some consulting and coaching, and sort of kind of reinvented what that was. But it started from a burnout. And the best advice, I've probably mentored probably 100, a little bit more over the past 2 years, coaches that reach out with the topic of burnout. Hey, here's where I'm at. I'm having a really hard time. What do I do?
Right.
I think you'll probably know this to be true, is if you're in strength and conditioning, you better have a plan B. I only know two coaches, Ron, in 27 years, that actually retired as head strength and conditioning coaches. That's two. Right. I've known thousands of coaches. That's not a very good ratio.
Sure.
And so if you don't have a plan B, you're going to be in trouble, because when it starts getting really pressing on you, when you start having trouble, you'll get the answer that I got the other day when I said, so what's your plan? And the plan was, I have no idea, George. I don't know what else I can do. And so that's bad, because that puts you up against the wall. You have no solutions, right? You're offering a service, but you have no solutions to yourself and your family. And the people that suffer the most is your family, right? They get crushed under the weight of mom does everything. Mom takes the kids to soccer. Mom buys a Christmas presents. Mom does everything. You just kind of, you're there. And that leads to then divorce and relationship problems. And it's burnout. It's all, everything is encompassed in burnout. So I'm an expert because I went through it, really kind of lost a marriage through it, or marriage kind of broke down through it, lost everything that I knew I had. But it also created a situation where the phoenix rises from the ashes, right? Yeah. From that tragedy, that burnout, Carver Hall Performance was reborn, and Carver Hall Performance was rethought in a different way of what performance meant. And performance doesn't necessarily mean strength and conditioning working at the collegiate or pro level from 9 to 5. It's whatever you decide it is. You just have to offer solutions, not just a service.
Right. Yeah, so many things to unpack there. I mean, I think the first thing is, so many times coaches ask me what they can be an expert in, and I always tell them that their mess is their message, you know, and the things that are most messy in their life.
I like that, yeah.
Or what they, you know, that those are the things that they can become experts in. And so, you know, going through something as such as burnout, it's not like you're, you know, it's not necessarily something you're most proud of, but the vulnerability shows that you that's an area of expertise for you, because you overcame it, and like you said, you the Phoenix rose from the ashes there, and you've got a great lifestyle business now. I think the second thing there is, what we've talked about many times on the show is, you know, I spoke at a conference, 10 years ago, and had everybody stand up, 400 people or so, and sit down if you can't name more than five people that are retired, and the whole room sat down, and had them stand back up, and sit down if you've, you know somebody that's gotten a divorce because of the profession, and most of the room sat down. And, it's a series of questions like that. And, we definitely have to be thinking bigger. Now, the question becomes, obviously, is how do we, because we all love what we do, mm-hmm. you take the junk out of it. You take the egos, you take sometimes the money, you take the moving, the time commitment, all those types of things out of it. We love the opportunity to make an impact on those types of athletes' lives. How do we do both? And obviously the solution that you found was going out on your own and creating a lifestyle business around your passions, which is definitely, in this day and age is definitely the easiest time to have done that in the history mm-hmm. of mankind. It's not easy to do. I'm not saying that, but it's the easiest time to be able to do that.
Sure.
But how do we change, how do we go back and do we change that base, that professional job that you had, or that collegiate job? How do we start to have that conversation where we prevent that from happening in those positions?
And I think that's the greatest point you just made there is we have to have a conversation, right? We're not even having the conversation, and we're having the conversation, it becomes somewhat taboo. And I think it's because everybody's in the same boat, Ron. Everybody's trying to do the best they can.
Right.
But when you put out that story, and I can't tell you how many times, but it's been a lot.
Sure.
Whenever I've told that story and someone reaches out and says, hey, that's me. Like, I'm going through that right now. I can't tell you. It's a lot. It's right. I can't give you a number, but it's a lot. And so that tells me there's a problem. And how do we get to a point where we're starting to address, grinding as a coach, right? 16 hours and 90 hours a week. Well, that's great, but I'm telling you, you're not going to be married for very long. Because if you put the job before the family, even though that's part of coaching, right, a little bit, the family understands the sacrifices, that's not going to last too long. It's going to lead to some bad things. So you have to kind of understand that there's no choice here for me, family always comes first. And so to that end, what I learned is I learned to say no.
Yeah.
I learned to say no a lot more, where I said yes a lot. And I wanted to people please, because that's part of my character. I suffered for it because I realized that 4 hours that I had is now 30 minutes because I gave 3.5 hours away.
Yeah.
And, so I learned to say no a lot more. And this, the response I'll get from somebody is like, well, I'm the collegiate setting. I have set hours. I have set standards. I can't say no. And yes, you can. It's just this, you have to build that bridge into something else, a plan B, so you can say no. And if it doesn't work out, then you have something else. But if you have nothing, you have nothing. And you're a yes man for the rest of your career.
Yeah. Well, I think, and I agree with, I think especially in present time, you have to have a plan B. You have to have what I always say, you have to have a plan for the periods of transition.
Correct.
You're going to go through a period of transition, whether or not you get fired, whether or not you change jobs, you have to be able to weather that if you're going to survive long term. Where I think that we as a profession need to improve is we were born in a time, our field was born in a time when people used to think that it was bad to lift weights for sports. And yet we had some, we had high character coaches that went and weathered that storm and created, a career where mm-hmm. people are getting $500,000 to do it now,
Right.
We have to continue to innovate and find ways to grow our profession. And tactical is one of those ways. That's probably mm-hmm. the only way we've really grown this profession mm-hmm. outside of just working with athletes at different levels. But we need to continue to innovate ways to do what we want to do, still have the impact that we want to have, but continue to build upon those experiences and that education, that investment that we've made into those jobs. So many times we get out and we go do whatever, you know, go sales or something along those lines. And it's, I mean, we just wasted all those years of, right, of development. I think we got to continue to build on that. So, I mean, it's a great conversation. I agree with you 100% that we need to have. You mentioned in there that you get a lot of young coaches reaching out and, you know, that are dealing with that or maybe dealing with other things and mentoring coaches. And I don't know about you. I mean, I cross between, I think you, as a, no matter where you're at on the spectrum, you can always mentor somebody that's walking down the same path that you walked.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That said, I also get a little frustrated as the crotchety old man in the profession now of, you know, if you ask any coach out there, what are they passionate about or what do they want to do? And they'll all say they want to mentor young coaches, you know, mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, you've been in this field for 2 years, you know, right. how about we focus on becoming a great coach first, you know, but
right.
Talk about, you know, when those young coaches come to you or those coaches are coming to you for not just the burnout, but other things. What are some of the most common questions and what's some of the most common advice that you're giving?
I think one of the most common questions has to do with program design, right? Everybody wants to build a super athlete. And so to that end, everyone wants the perfect program. And I go back to that previous answer where there is no perfect program. The perfect, you know, well, it's almost like, what's the best program out there? It's the one that the athletes will do.
Right.
But to that end, then you have to have some kind of adaptation to be able to have some performance standards met and maybe some injury prevention stuff. But it seems to be more and more on program design. And that tells me, again, that they're thinking back to that. I need to know everything. I need to know how to build a super athlete. And you and I both know it's really not that complicated. It can be. I'm not saying it can't be. But it's really not that complicated. At the end of the day, you need load and overload, and you need adaptation and supercompensation, and you need recovery.
Yeah.
And how you do that and how you do that versus what I do may be different, but at the end of the day, we're just trying to build an athlete and keep him injury-free. But that seems to be the one thing that I get probably more than anything right now is, how do I build the perfect athlete? What's the best speed program? Those type of things. And then the other side of that coin is, then how do I venture to something else? I have guys that have been coaching for 3 years and are burnt out. Like, well, I'm not sure if that's burnout, but okay, let's build your bridge to something else.
Right.
Because if you're feeling like this now, you ain't going to do it 20 years. It's not going to happen. It's very, very different.
When those people come to you with that, because I think that's something that a lot of people, you know, question. They're trying to figure out what maybe their plan B is or what their,
correct.
Know, how do you help guide them into not giving up, but developing skill sets in other areas?
Well, part of that is, I want to say, and I'll give you the credit, I think I learned a lot of that stuff from you, in the sense that you coach, but you do these other things, right? I remember it was a course or book that you had in resume writing.
Yeah.
Right? And I was listening to the Lauren Landau Iron Game Chalk Talk. And somewhere in there, I think it was, there was a mention of a probably pre-podcast about it.
Right.
And it, I thought, that's brilliant. Like, nobody's ever done that. I can't, and I know this to be true for you too. How many resumes have you gotten that they got your name wrong?
Yeah.
Exactly. Right? So you can't even get the job because you don't even know Ron McKeefe. You can't even spell Ron McKeefe, because you didn't take the time to really do it right. And so I thought, that's really what we need more of, is someone that's thinking outside the box of coaching sets and reps is good. It's great. But there's more to coaching than that. You know, resume building or products or building an email list, things that guys aren't thinking about, but at the end of the day, creates a funnel for multiple streams of income. At the end of the day, coaching is just coaching, but here's the other things that you can do that I think you need to start build. I'm not saying quit the job.
Right.
I'm saying start building a bridge to something else and keep doing the job. You may have to grind for a little bit more, but build that bridge so that that grind doesn't have to be forever. Everybody grinds in this profession when you start. It doesn't have to be forever. If you're grinding in this profession after 20 years, you've done it wrong. I'm sorry. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. No, I appreciate that. I've had lots of people contribute to me, so by far it hasn't been me, but I would echo what you said there in that I think so many times people are looking for a way out, and I've never looked at it that way. I've never looked at it. I've always looked at it as, how do I keep myself in the profession? Right. How do I find these revenue streams? How do I find these skill sets that I can develop that are going to make me unique, that are going to give me, you know, skills that I can weather those periods of transition, and keep me in the profession? And I think, you know, that's the mindset that we're missing. You know, I think so many times we want to stay within the four walls of the weight room, and we don't want to venture outside and learn from other disciplines or learn from even the people that we have access to. But, you know, finding ways to create those multiple streams, create balance in your life, create security with your finances, you know, all those types of things are the things that we lack. We lack education because those were the things that we didn't go to school for, you know.
Right.
But it's
how can you be relevant within the parentheses of strength and conditioning outside of, you know, sets of reps? And one of the things I always put up to the guys is, you know, strength and conditioning in the middle, and then you have these arms, kind of like a brain map of what else are you interested in? What are you good at?
Right.
And then start building a bridge toward those things, understanding that the main arm, the main component is still strength and conditioning.
Absolutely. Yeah, fantastic idea. You mentioned recovery in there, and that's one of the things that I most know of you is work that you do in recovery and you know, everything from just simply how much surfing is a part of your life, and now that's used as mindfulness and you know, things along those lines. When athletes come to you and they're in that sympathetic state and they just simply can't get out of it, you know, what are some of the steps that you take to tactical steps, takeaways that coaches can listen today and go and implement into their teams or their athletes that you recommend for those athletes?
Sleep. You know, everybody says, well, I sleep already. Sleep is the number one recovery tool. I don't care if you're having post-workout shakes, compression gear, and cool water immersion. That's all nice, but if you're not sleeping, none of that works. And so sleep is when the brain takes out the trash. So if you're not sleeping, you're not recovering. You're just piling trash on top of trash on top of trash. So what I do is I'll use just a simple sleep app to see the length of time someone's asleep, when they go to bed, when they wake up. And I want to see if they're in REM sleep, if they're doing 90-minute cycles of REM sleep, and how many of those cycles. Usually I think it's 5 or 6 cycles a night. So if I see someone's just doing one, so you may be in bed for 8 hours, you're just not sleeping. So we need to fix that. That could be something as simple as understanding, you know, dark room, nice chilled, dark curtains for a room, nice chilled room, 67 degrees, earplugs. Whatever you need to sort of stop and create that womb experience where there's no stimulus. So sleep is the number one thing for me. Is nothing. I don't work on anybody. I don't work with anybody who's not willing to do that. I just don't take them on as a client because I can't fix that.
Right.
They're willing to do post-workout shakes and all that stuff. That's awesome. But we need to get you to sleep. That's how you recover. Then we can start throwing in all of the other things. I learned a lot about recovery from having a traumatic brain injury from a surfing accident, where I was essentially sympathetically turned on 24/7 for almost 8 months, and what that felt like. And it feels like putting your car in brake and just putting a brake on the accelerator. That's what it feels like. Yeah. And you feel like that from the moment you wake up, the moment you go to bed. And the one thing that helped me just when I realized there's actually two things. When I realized I was at the end of my rope was meditation. When I was a high school senior, my mother gave me as a high school present, a transcendental meditation course. I wanted a Camaro. Yeah. I wanted a trip to Disney World. That's not what I wanted.
Yeah. Right.
And she said it's going to take you 20 years until you figure this out, why I need this. And it did. It took 25 years, actually. But then I realized the value of what that was. And what that did was it basically shut down the brain.
Right.
It flipped that sympathetic system. It flipped the switch off to back to more parasympathetic rest and digest. And then and only then was I able to make leaps and bounds in my brain injury recovery. And the second thing was, which is very, very popular now, and I've been doing it for 25 years because I saw the value in, is breathing, specifically apnea breathing protocols. I had a car accident a couple of years ago that put me in a tremendous amount of pain, and nothing seemed to help. And the one thing that sort of broke through all that was an apnea breathing protocol. It was a recover breathing protocol. Everybody does it now with, you know, belly breathing and box breathing and stuff. The military is big on it. So those three things together, sleep, meditation, and breathing, is what I call now breathing is a remote control to the brain. You can get yourself into a state, but you can also get yourself out of sympathetic state simply just by breathing. And so those are the three things I've taught more than anything else. And I've spent a lot of time with guys that come back from IED concussion injuries,
yeah,
working specifically those, you know, flotation tanks.
Yeah.
As a way to sort of give them super, super meditation. That's basically what it is, a flotation tank. Aerobic exercise, increasing BDNF in the brain. Sleep, getting that. CBD oil, using anything and I can in my power to be able to get lower inflammation status in the brain and then just get guys turned off. Then and only then does the brain start to heal.
Yeah, so important, and lots of things to pull out there. I mean, one thing that I don't want to miss, but what I really liked about what you just did there was not only did you give a tactic and a reason, but you gave a story behind it. It was the car accident, or it was the traumatic brain injury, or you found things in your own life to kind of make it relatable to the athletes. And I think so many times we don't do that, you know?
Right.
Talk about the rev in the engine. I mean, I making an analogy there. I think that's coaching in its purest form, is storytelling and making it, you know, relatable, which I really was impressed with. And I think the other thing is, you know, I agree with all of that. I think those are three main things. And it's, you know, when athletes come and they ask, how do I improve, to give them those types of questionnaires. Are you sleeping 8 hours a day? Are you eating 5 meals a day? Are you, you know, if you're not doing that stuff, then, I mean, we're just fighting a losing battle.
Right.
The meditation piece is the one that I have the hardest time with personally, because I think, like, the float tank, it's the worst thing in the world for me. Like, to sit there and
it's not for everybody. Yeah, it's not for everybody.
Just to be alone with my thoughts, it's awful, you know. But what I have found is some mindfulness in, you know, either jiu-jitsu or mountain biking or things like that, where, mm-hmm, like, if I'm not focusing on what I'm doing and being present, I'm going to get hurt, you know.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
Those have been ways for me. I think, you know, I think others, I think surfing for you.
Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of research that says that that mindfulness creates a lot of changes in the brain. So meditation is great, but mindfulness is very, very important.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, man, this has been great. We end the show with some resources. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
It's the first thing that I heard when I came to Nebraska, and was the last thing I heard when I came out. The best ones adapt. It's a piece of advice that I didn't really think too much about, but I think I've pulled it out and used 100,000 times. The great ones adapt. It was Boyd Epley said that.
That's a good one. You give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
A book, The One Thing by Gary Keller. And so the premise here is, what is the one thing that if you do this thing, everything works out and gets better? And for anybody who's a procrastinator, or those in the profession that are going through analysis by paralysis, what's the best program, is what's the one thing that's going to get you better, that you can get to that point. I found it fascinating. I love that book. I read it every year. I gift it at Christmas quite a bit. An app, I would have to say Twitter. Just a vast amount of information, and it's a great coaching resource, a great way to network. I love it. Website, Simply Faster. I think Carl's done a phenomenal job with putting out a resource for coaches where he gives a platform to new and young people. But it's just a very valuable resource. It's probably the only thing I hit probably every day.
Yeah, all great recommendations there. Well, man, I think, like I said at the very beginning, I mean, you're one of the all-time great, great guys in our profession. If you go to a conference, you're going to be, engaged and in the front row and taking notes and, building relationships. And it's just awesome to watch all through the years. And, what I respect the most about you and your career is your ability to take those vulnerable moments, find a way to kind of create a learning opportunity from them, and then turn around and share them with the people that you surround yourself with. And we all get better when people do that. Whenever we each break down those walls and we check ego at the door, we all get better. And I'm definitely better for knowing you, and I just appreciate you coming on the show, man.
Appreciate it. Yeah, for me, I had to do something with it, right? I had to use it. It couldn't just been a bad moment. That would have been great for me to have overcome it, but there was a lesson there. I really thought so, and so I've become very transparent with it, and I guess it's resonated with people because of that, and that's awesome. Great. Appreciate it.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.